The tax deadline is almost here, and TaxAct has live experts to help answer any last-minute questions you may have. Questions like, can I claim my SUV as my home office if I answer work emails in my car? If I adopted 12 dogs this year, can I list them as dependents? And am I doing this right, or am I doing this very, very wrong? Our experts have the answers to those questions and many others. TaxAct. Let's get them over with.
Psoriatic arthritis symptoms can be unpredictable.
I had joint pain, and I couldn't move like I used to.
I needed relief.
I got Cosentyx.
It helped me move better.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for people 2 years of age and older with active psoriatic arthritis. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your rheumatologist about Cosentyx.
Go loud. Talking bollocks with FBT Gyms. Unleash your fitness potential with no contract and full class access. FBTGyms.ie.
Go loud. Sounds better with us.
What you waiting for? Put your back in
it. Just a little more. Throw your weight in the ground. Tell your body okay. Walk it out and low. When you feel it, just
the hypnotic.
Go down, go down, go down. Come up, come up.
Episode 210 of the Talking Bollocks podcast, brought to you by Go Loud and proudly supported by FBT Gyms.
Roy Calvin, tell me, this Hyrox thing that you're up to, what is it?
It's a new fitness and endurance competition. You run for a kilometre, followed by a workout like a sled push. Then you run again, and you do that 8 times over with 8 different exercises, and the fastest time wins.
I thought you didn't even like running anymore. You threw away your shoes the last time I seen you doing a race.
And it's good crack if you have the right team around you, like the amazing coaches at FBT Gyms, who are officially Hyrox affiliated and deliver brilliant Hyrox classes. I wasn't too sure about committing at first, but they built me up for a lot of hard work, and it'll pay off on the day.
So anyone can do it if they join FBT Gym?
Anyone. Unleash your potential at FPT Gym for only €44 per month with no contract and full class access.
They have locations in Swords, Coolock, Drogheda and the newest opening in Tallaght.
Sign up today at fptgyms.ie.
It's me, COB.
It's me, Terry Flower.
And today we're joined by... Sorry, I didn't know how to do that. sorry, I was drinking water. Dara O'Brien, that's my name. Yeah, I wasn't expecting when you pointed at me there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was drinking water.
We could have put you away. This happens every leaving week, I guess, doesn't it?
I mean, because people are just kind of winding up to do their own introductions. I mean, yeah, I'm happy to, a bit of flag, you know, some sort of, you know, warning, like, you know, some sort of, give me an alert. Are there any other format points I need to know, like, whatever they got, they need to start into?
No, other than that, Dara, that's it. But I just thought the best person to introduce you was yourself.
Yeah, honestly, it's just a name. Anyone can do it. Like, if you can read it out, like, it's grand. Yeah, so it's fine.
Do you know
In that moment, I was actually the worst person to do it because I had a mouth full of water. So I don't want to do that thing of the spit take thing. You know, like, yeah. I mean, that, you know, that's dramatic, but it's, you know, it's an old comedy fucking staple. I can do that again. Here, get me to do it again. Do the whole introduction again. Do the instructions.
Right, come on. It's me, COB.
It's me, Terry Flower.
And today we're joined by...
Dara O'Brien.
You were looking for a reason to spit on me.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
Because it was...
Well, at least we have the clip for this week's episode.
You have, that is. Yeah, there you go.
There.
Right, go on, Terry, tell them what happened there.
No, I'm after being let. Dara, firstly, I apologise.
No worries, man.
I said I have to apologise on air. As soon as we start, I have to apologise to everyone in here as well. Ed, all the boys, Calvin and all. Very sorry about that. I'm after being late. I thought it was a 5:30 start. But you
were late for the 5:30 start. It wasn't that you were late for the 5 o'clock start that it was. You were then late for the 5:30 start.
Yeah,
I mean, so like, I would have pitched 5:45, 6. I would have gone that. Like, so you appeared early. But actually, your excuse, you're still late in your excuse. that's the bit that's exciting for me. The look, this wouldn't be a problem because I literally have to go and do Vicar Street, like so that's the only reason that it's like TikTok. But I'm really impressed by you going. Like, I mean, if you're gonna do the bullshit thing, at least extend 15 minutes. Like, at least go. Oh no, I gotta think. It's at 6, so I thought I'd be here 25 minutes early. That's how you do the bullshit excuse, like as opposed to.
I thought you were going to let me down gently there.
No, Jesus.
I was saying to him, I told him about the whole car and license situation. I was like, slag him for that. He's like, no, don't worry, I'll find my own reason to slag him.
He's at the spitting on me.
Yeah. Oh, the hostility is seething here. But also, I'm going, Ali, you know, he's late now, you know, traffic. I said, all right, because I walked. I just headed off, like, whatever. Check the phone, how long do I need? Kill time, actually, was actually early. So kill time walking around, around the watch shops that I don't need to fucking buy a watch in, on Chatham Street, just hovered, going, well, don't get here too early. And it's as well, they didn't, really. If you're having a jaunt, roof down, driving around town illegally, just enjoying the sights and sounds. It's like, whatever, hey, meet me, cut to you, beeping people in a low-riding car. Hey, honey. Junga. You want to get in the back of the car? I got nothing. I got time for you, girl. That's what you're doing as you're driving along. I always got time for you. I got nothing pressing happening. Small voice in your head going, you do, though. You do. You've something you have to get to. No, I'll leave it. Leave it. Anyway. So anyway, yeah. Thanks for coming. Thanks for making it. Grand.
Dara, we have you booked in probably a week, 2 weeks now, and... like, everything you've done in your career to get to the stage are that, this is not how I expected the first 5-10 minutes of this podcast to go. This is horrendous.
Honestly, I'm just venting. I had some time to think and weigh up my choices.
Tell us how you really feel.
That's great. It's only because it's the bit before the show.
No, this is...
this is actually my magical nap time. So that I'm not doing.
This makes it a lot worse, is that you are literally on stage in about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It's shocking. So again, I apologise.
He made a good point outside. He was like, lads, I'm not being anxious, but like, I have to go to work. And I was like, he does. No, he is going to work. He's going to make a living. Like, yeah, I was like, can't fault the fella.
And like, it's not like, I'm not like I'm busy during the day. Three, you should see me at 3. Nothing happened at 3. Is it 11 o'clock? Nothing happened at 11 o'clock. But like, let's do it as close to the actual gig. Let's get you to talk for an hour before you have to go and talk for 2 hours. This is the plan. What were you doing at 3?
Playing FIFA.
Jesus, what were you doing at 3?
I was on work.
Oh yeah, of course. You're mending things and making things.
Being an engineer.
So I can see you as clearly bonded.
Oh, respect. Bonded. I seen him. He was fuming out there. The steam was coming out of his ears. I was like, Arsenal are doing all right, aren't they?
Oh no, that's a whole other thing. We'll get to that in a second. Like, whatever. Oh no, he was there. He was burying you out there. He was coming. I'm so sorry, but there's nothing we can do. We're tied to him. He's in all the idents. He's on the posters. We're stuck with him. Do you know what I mean? This is an intervention. And we just say, we sit down and we'll tell him, you know, you got to work on this. You got to work on this. People are getting hurt now.
Yeah.
By this, by you driving your low rider around Dawson Street, picking up chicks when you're supposed to be. Respect you. Oh, you're probably married with kids for that. Like, whatever.
Yeah. No, that's all right. You can say it.
I'm sowing seeds here.
It's comedic value, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
That's what we'd say in court. That's what we would say. It's not low rider. He drives a golf.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not my first time in the last couple of weeks either. So, yeah, really, I do really need to work on my timekeeping. It's been horrendous, hasn't it?
There's a pattern of this.
In the last 2 weeks.
And yet, people aren't telling you to arrive at 4:30. So in other words, that you would then, you know, people aren't kind of going, oh yeah, unfortunately it's a production issue, you have to move the recording to 4:30.
He's onto something, then,
when you see that email arriving, you know, and it says, oh, studio timings have changed, so we've had to shift just slightly earlier, then you'll know that they're certainly trying to manipulate you and get you in like this. So yeah, get your low riding done by 4, get over here for 4:30, show starts at 5. So yeah, that's the way. I'm all right, I'm genuinely all right, I'm quite enjoying this. So it's fine.
I'm sick, I come in.
Absolutely fine.
I should have stayed out.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Were you doing well at FIFA?
I was going, yeah, I was on a win streak.
How was your season going?
Was it right, like? I'm going strong. Better than Arsenal. Sorry. No, sorry.
I'm just going to step out, yeah.
Again, I'll ask him, who do you follow?
Liverpool. Oh, so it's hard to say.
That's legit. You can say that. He's United. Yeah. He was giving me grief.
Why?
Well, I was just saying, like,
unbelievable. I got a 10 minutes of like, would you be happy with Arteta now? Yeah, we would actually. How are things in 13th? We're very happy with Arteta, actually. I wouldn't be, would you be happy with second every year? I'd be happier with that than 13th. Can I make that point again? God love United fans. No, well done, genuinely. It's been not a good week, but generally a very good season. It's great. And you're unlikely to screw it up. But the last couple of weeks where we had a chance to get close to him, we just couldn't put the ball in the net against Forest. Oh, there was about three in a row where we got nil all draws or whatever.
Obviously, you have had some huge injuries this season as well.
Yeah,
when you're like, because it happened those a couple of seasons ago. And I'm a Liverpool fan. I was like, but we have injuries. And people go, the excuses. It's hard when you're the fan.
It's a game of luck in a huge way. We had all the luck last year because we had no injuries at all. Mm. We were very aware that nothing, there was no weird refereeing decisions. Yeah. This year, tons of injury and tons of red cards that just were kind of really marginal. And
early in the season.
And they went from wins to draws because of it, like whatever. Yeah. So just, sometimes you get the luck and sometimes you don't. You have had tons of luck until this week with last minute goal. You like, it was kind of when you needed the goals to happen, you got the goals. Brentford, Nunez against Brentford, this kind of stuff is happening a lot.
I don't even think this week was about bad luck though. I think the teams that beat us, I left going, they actually deserve to go 3-1.
They deserve to beat us.
Do you get me? You were the better team, but we were shit. Anyways, is this what you do in every podcast and interview? Do you just come in and roast the two hosts?
No, I don't just rule. I don't even roast it in a gig. Like, I'm really kind of, I quite like the, you know, if it felt you wanted me to do that. I'm doing quite benign.
Yeah,
because it's like when you do the chat to people in the audience. There's a kind of the verb people use is pick on people, but you don't want to be doing that because people clam up when you do that, like whatever. So the whole hope is that you elevate and you create some ridiculous out of what they do, like whatever. Yeah. There's a woman who says, "What do you teach?" And I said, and I always do the thing with the hands. I go, "How big?" And she goes, "Oh, big." And I had my hand really high. I said, "Is it just a school for really tall kids, like who can't get into the school?" Like because they can't fit in. And it's about the problems affecting, you know, really tall kids who are like squeezed into benches who can't learn because their heads are bent slightly to the side because they're under the roof. Like this kind of, and it just came this ridiculous thing about Mary's School for the Tall in Monaghan. And then after the gig, I got a big round of applause for at the end about, isn't it great? Because in my day, we had to sit with normal sized people, but we don't anymore. Mary's got a school in Monaghan that does the really tall people's school. And like, she sent me a thing going out on Twitter after going, like, thanks, I'll back off to Monaghan now, teach the tall boys tomorrow. Like, when you're doing that, it's nice. It's a nice thing. You're not going, look at the head and you prick. Yeah. That's like the wrong tone, I feel, to do it. It feels like it's a weird thing that people have a hangover from the clubs, that's what people presumed it was, that you go in and there's a guy there going, I don't go to your place of work and, you know, knock the cocks from your mouth. I don't know we'd have these lines, you know, like and go boom, there you go, and I was like, like it's gladiatorial or whatever. That gets tired really fast. So you know, you can't,
you feel like that's the way comedy has gone.
No. I think comedy is really broad, and bits of it fall into focus sometimes. So sometimes people are talking about political communities, and sometimes people are talking about non-political, or talking people are angry, or people who are things. And so everyone is just doing what they do. But the fashions and fads and the media tends to pick up bits of it and go, look at all this. Look, here's three political comedians. So therefore, comedy is now political.
Yeah.
And actually, there's 400 acts in Edinburgh, and just they're all doing their own thing, like whatever. And just sometimes it feels like that's what the culture wanted to look at in that moment, like whatever. So, for example, there was a whole thing about post-COVID. Would it go silly after post-COVID because it'd been so serious for 2 years? And would it be all ridiculous stuff for a while and people walking into custard pies and, you know, just that stuff? And now it's like, with Trump back, is it all serious, like whatever? People are just doing the same stuff they did, because you find your voice and you just do it. You do the thing you love doing. It's like a band. It's like you know, bands all do their sound, like whatever. It's not like they go, this year I think we've decided to stop being U2 and we're just going to play samba. We're going to stop, like, The Edge. Can you play samba? Okay, Bono. And now we're a samba band because that's what people want, like whatever. It's not the way you have a sound and you do your sound, like the and if you're lucky, that's a sound that people love to hear and it goes really, really well. But that's who you are. And comedy's a bit like that.
I think what I was getting at there is that the way comedy is going, I think nowadays with social media and comedy, I think that's probably the most impressive way to go.
The clips of, yeah, of, yeah, crowd work. It's because we don't give up material. And so you end up, the only kind of renewable resource you have is to clip the bits where you say, hey, you're here. And I'm doing it now. Like, I literally this afternoon was going through old Vicar Street things in the last week and grabbing a bit out and editing it and then putting the subtitles on it and then putting it in the Instagram 16:9 format and putting a title on it and all this shit that I really was not wanting to spend my 50s learning how to do. So you can drop out two or three clips a week of this stuff, like whatever. So we're all doing that. Now it's just so much happening. I think the competitive advantage of it is probably gone.
Yeah.
Probably, and we're in massive danger of oversaturating,
yeah,
the market with so much chat,
yeah,
that people who do chat, like this guy here, like the he says, sorry, two thumbs, this guy here, people go, oh, chat, he's still doing chat. Oh, chat was very 2024. And so that's a worry that it's gonna feel like it's been done to death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you not feel like it encourages people? Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm going to go there and I'm going to be the one to take him down. We all paid to see this fella on the stage slagging people. I'm going to slag him and he's not going to come back to that.
I don't think any more than it did. I think still people paid to see your show and... when you're doing a theatre tour, say when you're doing the kind of tour like I'm doing, people book their tickets months in advance and they arrange a babysitter and they, you know, they could go book a meal and they make, or they take a trip somewhere to see or whatever. They're not going in order to slag you off. They might go to a club and do that, you know, and you pay in, but like it requires a touch more organisation to go to a theatre gig than it does, and people, yeah, try to make a thing of it like, yeah, you're at a show. I'm at a show, so I'm going to sit back and watch the show, like whatever, luckily. So it feels really weird and jarring. The Peter Kay thing, for example.
Yeah, that was bad.
Just people pissed. Like,
what was that? Sorry.
Oh, just someone kept shouting, but like he stopped the whole show basically. He was like, get them out. You are leaving. No, yeah, you there. You're leaving.
Went to a Peter Kay gig and shouted garlic bread repeatedly.
That's his gag.
A gag that he had from about 15, 20 years ago. And this guy kept shouting garlic bread. The great kind of variable in this is booze. People on booze, you know, if they're hammered and they chat, and because they'll chat and they'll want to get reaction because they're pissed, but it's not like there's no magic word a comedian can say that will sober somebody up,
yeah,
enough for them to realize, oh, I'm making a bit of an idiot of myself here. They're just drunk and they're just going to carry on shouting. And eventually, if the venue's smart, somebody will quietly go over and go, no, you need to either shut it or, you know, people around you. Because in all of this, anytime you see them with a comedian, it's never because the comedian's feelings are delicate, they're being hurt by it. You're responsible for the night out of everyone in that room.
Yeah.
And somebody's fucking it up. And somebody's shouting and roaring and people around them are going, or somebody's filming. And the reason we don't like people filming isn't because, oh no, this clip is going to ruin the secret surprise of my show. No one ever sees them. They have these things that people think they might, but no one ever goes, look, I've exclusively filmed all of Darwin's gig and I'm putting it on Facebook. No one watches that. Right? No one ever watched that stuff. But the people behind them are watching a screen. This fucking phone is held up in front of them, like whatever. So that's where you tell them, put down the phones. Because you're irritating the people behind you,
yeah,
who are looking at a bright screen filming me when they want to just watch me, but their eye is drawn to this thing instead. Like, yeah, your responsibility is you're like you're running a club or something, and like, yeah, you're a promoter, is to the enjoyment of the entire room. And if somebody's being a dick, they're not fucking up for you, they're fucking up for the rest of the audience.
Like, yeah.
And so the idea is the venue's, Vic is very good, I think, for doing that. Because yeah. Vic is unusual because they actually serve booze.
Yeah.
So they're running that tightrope in a way that most venues are not. Most venues don't let you go in and drink when you're there. But Vicar does, which makes it brilliant because people are all kind of informal and loose and chatty. But if it tips over and...
Fine line, yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes doing Vicar is like surfing a wave that you feel is breaking behind you at every point. And you kind of, and you do the 2 hours or whatever. And I remember getting onto the shore, like put like the boogie board I'm standing on, sliding onto the sand and feel behind whoosh, of the crash of the wave where I'm just slightly ahead,
yeah,
of a thing that's breaking,
yeah,
and of pissed people at Christmas or on a summer's night when they're all being out boozing all day and then they come into the show like whatever, where they're all jarred and you kind of go, I'm just holding this off. I'm just a one step away from this carnage behind me. I'm like, there's a zombie army running behind me clawing like, yeah, about 28 days later and I'm just a step ahead of them and I just get to the door with the padlock and I close it, slam, and I just, and then pff, and you can hear them all slamming against the door. They're just, sometimes booze just does that. Booze just changes people.
But that heckle there where you're on about where he's shouting garlic bread repeatedly, it's just, how do you even think that that's going to be funny?
you don't. Your brain is going, that's Peter Kay. He used to say garlic bread. Yeah. I'll say garlic bread back to him. And then he'll say a thing back to me. And then Peter Kay, I would imagine there's about three things that he said to him. And the guy, it's nothing will make somebody go, all right, I've done my conversation now. Yeah. That's great. It's lovely. Because you're pissed. Yeah. So you're just going to keep going, I'm going to shout it again. Because I do shout again, he'll keep talking to me. Yeah. It's like you've made contact with the mothership. Yeah. And you think it's going to just keep, I'm going to keep broadcasting here. Like, yeah. And so eventually somebody has to step in and go, mate.
Yeah, it's horrible though, because like they're sitting in the middle of the row. So the security has to come down and be like, you. And like they're trying to like, no, I'm not leaving. And the security's it's going to make
mess.
His way down
it's
the row.
It's a fucking mess.
And Peter Kay's commentating on the whole thing, sitting down like, yeah, the show's stopping until you leave. And you're like, this is horrible for every single person under that.
Everyone feels awkward. And it's every really, really
And it's hard to bring that back to normal, I'd imagine.
Very tough, yeah.
The energy because, in the room is gone.
It's all messy. And there are people who generally go, oh, well, you should have been able to, what?
Yeah.
What are the magic words that stops the piss guy being pissed?
Yeah.
And why do we all know those words? Why doesn't every bounce in the world know this magic word, these words that make somebody, that you like you hit, oh, you're in the room and you're out of the room. you're not drunk anymore. What is a hack that we have that stops a pissed person being pissed? Would you tell it to every barman in the world? They'd fucking love to know what that is. Yeah. Every guard would like to know. Oh, what can I say just to make somebody magically not drunk? Like but there's always people who go, oh, well, you should have been able to. What should have been?
There's nothing you can do on that.
There's nothing you can do. It's just the people are people and they're drunk. Like whatever.
And that's the thing. Yeah, if you take somebody down with a good, like someone heckles you, you take them down. There's no guarantee it stops there.
It only works if they realise they've been taken down.
Yeah, exactly.
If they hear the laughter around them and go, oh yeah, that's a bit embarrassing for me.
I'll just stop.
But they don't have that, like whatever. It's gigs you do as well, say, not your show, for example, like a after dinner or Christmas party or something like that. And people are very wary of doing them because people are just talking to themselves. And again, equally, if you're really what you can walk out, hey, I'm here, and maybe they'll turn, like whatever. But maybe they won't because they're seeing people in their office and they're drinking and they're chatting each other up and they're doing that, whatever. Maybe they're like, oh yeah, no, I really like your stuff, but right now, I just want to talk to Mary from accounts because I think I'm in with a chance here. so it's like, what's going to win that? Like, what joke is better than your chance at riding Mary from accounts? And so you're going to carry on talking to Mary from accounts, like no matter what. So they're just situations. It's not a magic trick we're doing here, you know, you're in a room and sometimes it wins. There's gigs I've done where I remember saying to somebody, it was for a haulage company, it was in Manchester, and it was a plant hire. That was it, a big plant hire chain shops. Yeah. And I thought, great, I'll just do stuff about it. I'm going to take the money, I'm going to rent a digger. Who can rent me a digger? I'll run that joke and it'll be great fun. And then I'll go into my material. And then I'll go into my material. And then I went in and the woman organizing it, I said, how are they? She said, oh, they're lovely. They're lovely, she said. And I walked out. They were just gee-eyed. Absolutely gee-eyed, not paying any attention. And I said, hey, everyone. They're like, oh, they're like, and it became 20 minutes. It took every bit of doing it for 30 years to get 20 minutes out of air to go, look at that guy and that guy and don't forget that guy. And then you're just basically, whoa. It's like talking to a baby. And when you entertain a small, like a baby, and you go, or you do the, peekaboo. And like it's that essentially. So they would go, oh, something's happened. Like whatever. And I go, I look at Bob. Don't forget Bob. Ah, they all chat. They go, oh, Bob. Nothing. I said nothing. If I watched it back, there was nothing in it. And I said, who's going to lend me a digger? And some woman said, I'll fucking lend you. She came up like all saucy, like I'm going, please sit down. And then, where's the boss? How are you letting this happen? Oh, but don't forget Bob. And you're back to Bob again. And it was just every trick you could do just to get it to 12 minutes. Something where they sense they'd seen something. And I went, you guys have a fantastic Christmas. And don't forget the digger. And also, don't forget Bob. And he goes, Bob, Bob, Bob. Like, and I remember walking off going, that was the fucking, I just got away with that. And it was like, I'm very aware that it took years of being able to do it, to do that, just to be able to like wave enough arms around so they were distracted enough to get it to long enough, but to also know when to go, that we've done enough now.
Yeah.
I can get off. And I remember getting off and the same woman, I said to her, oh my God. And she said, Yeah, I thought that was going to be pretty tough. And I said, you didn't fucking tell me. She said, well, come on, what's it going to do? Send you out telling you they were shit like this, crap. So I lied to you, you know? Yeah. She said, you're the one who's done best ever there. Yeah. They're just always really like that. So
that's heavy on that, especially the whole improv thing.
Yeah.
That's a skill that I can't imagine how much that takes for a comedian to be able to go out and do, like, because I know you do long parts of your show, or a good long part of your show, and then you'll keep referring back and stuff. How difficult that must be. Do you find it difficult?
The times I notice it difficult is if you're tired. Say for example, there's days where I go from family clock, as in like get up early for school runs, that kind of stuff, into gigging, so that my energy has to keep going through the day, and I don't get on a gig, you'll sleep later and you'll crash out, you'll have time to get some sleep. If one of those days where you've only had a few hours sleep and then you've had to fly to here, for example, and you get in and you got to go straight to the venue or whatever, and you haven't got enough sleep because you've been on the normal human being time scale, and so you're doing the gig with a little sleep. Yeah, there's times where I go, hey, what do you do? I'm a financial procurement manager, and I'm going, oh, great. And my brain's going, no, nothing. I got nothing there. And you're going, well, go procure yourself over there, you prick. There's nothing. But it's just like, you get better filling it with nothing, filling the nothing with something, so the audience get it. But then you go, please don't watch that back, because really there's nothing there. It was just me. If you're in the moment and you kind of go, and then you go, oh, okay, I know to ask another question and then another question, and now I can build a thing that runs and runs and runs, and I can keep coming back, or I can go, I'm not going to loop you into that conversation. Yeah. That's right. But it is, there's a training element to it. You just get better from doing it loads and loads. Mm. But there's times where you're just tired and it's like, nope. Yeah. Your brain's going, good luck now. Good luck. I've checked out. Yeah. I was up this morning when you were dropping the kid off at school, like whatever, I'm not hearing it still. I'm on nap time, me. Well, but good luck with the gig. You're going, don't leave me here on my own. Yeah. And there's nothing off them. It is a trick. Some people don't do it. And there's times that I'm tempted not to. The times you're going, oh, fuck, do I have to? Hello.
Yeah.
But then every so often, four lads, the clip I was trying to do, and I'll drop it at some stage, was four lads who said they were priests. And I got really excited. What kind of priests are you? I said, well, we're deacons. And I said, oh, you're not even real priests yet. What happens when you become a real priest? Is there like smoke? Is there oil? No, that's confirmation. And you can see me struggling to remember Catholic things from years ago. I said, is there a psh? And I did a whole thing about, is there a guy with symbols? And you go, you're a priest. And he goes, psh. Like, that'd be amazing if there was a guy by the altar with two huge symbols. And you're a priest. Psh. Yeah, you're a priest. Like, whatever. And then I said, how long until you're a priest? And the guy said, actually, we work in IT. We just made it up. Like, and I was like,
class.
Oh, I was really, and you can see me going, I was really into the priest thing. This is going to be a thing. I was going to do all sorts of, I'm working IT. No, what do you do? A bit of programming. And so there's a symbol made into the whole joke, but it's like, sometimes it's just, oh, it's lovely when I think it runs. There was a lad in Vicar who was a bus driver. I said, what route do you do? And he was telling me the route. And he said, but I've been on the, I've been off with, whatever it is that when you're off for health reasons. I said, how long? He said, about 6 months. I said, and I was going, 6 months off? He's with his family. He said, geez, he must be very ill. I mean, you out tonight. You must be very ill. And yet also out tonight, like whatever. And the family are loving this, is the thing, right? And I said, and then about two people on, whole joke about, what are the people in, It was like Blanchardstown or something like that, or Ongar, one of these routes, like whatever. And I said, sure, and how long have you been there? And there's people just standing at the bus stop for 6 months waiting for you to arrive, like whatever. And how long have they been there? Like whatever. And running joke with this. And then I went to some woman who's pregnant. And I said, are you still working? She said, oh, yeah, I'll work until the last couple of weeks. And I turned back to your man and said, she's still fucking working. She's pregnant. And you get out of your arse and drive a bus. That ran for ages. And then at the end, came out of the end, and then said, look, I want to dedicate this to the people of, and I started listing all these towns, and nobody knows why people are going, and I listed on and blah, 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 and Darndale and all these different towns or whatever. And his family start laughing. And I said, and I go through the whole, nobody knows in the book, but it becomes crazy, the route of the bus, the people. And I went town after town, who have been for the last 6 months just standing, waiting for one man to finally get off his hole and start driving the bus again. And the family were like, fucking lovely. They were so delighted looking. I'm like, yeah, dad's been ill, but this is funny that he's jail at the end. When it works, it's lovely.
Yeah.
And when it works, and when Vicar get involved, I've had them go up to the flats to get footballs. I've had them make things in the break, like whatever, that we do a thing, like whatever, just stupid things. And they've really gotten into it, like whatever, and supplied me with stuff. So at the end, I can go, well, you said, and they, oh, but we went and found, like, with a young, like a League of Ireland player who came on, who said, you said we couldn't find a football. And they literally won the bounces, went to the flats behind Vicker Street and knocked and said, can anyone give me a football? And give them like 10 euros for a ball or something like that, and brought it back down again. And I was able to produce it from behind the curtain at the end. And your man came up and did keep you up, he's in, and he hoofed it into the lighting rig in the ceiling, and we all watched it and then disappeared into the lights, as it were, and then bounced around and then slowly dropped down, and an audience member got up and just caught it in midair, and the roof came off the place. Yeah, and it was just like, when you make a thing from nothing,
yeah,
it's lovely. Mm-hmm. Very good. It's very, very nice. But you also have to have a ship.
Just a little more.
Roundup Dual Action products rock like a hardcore metal band. This stuff kills existing weeds down to the root, and for an encore, keeps them from coming back for up to 4 months. That's a nonstop 16-week tour of killing and preventing weeds in all the famous outdoor venues, the patio, the driveway, the mulch bed, even along the fence. When it comes to your hardscapes and landscapes, the stuff puts on a show. Roundup Dual Action products kill and prevent weeds for up to 4 months. This stuff rocks. This stuff works. When used as directed, always read and follow pesticide label directions.
Psoriatic arthritis symptoms can be unpredictable.
I had joint pain and I couldn't move like I used to.
I needed relief.
I got Cosentyx.
It helped me move better.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for people 2 years of age and older with active psoriatic arthritis. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your rheumatologist about Cosentyx.
We were chatting outside and you were like, what do you want to talk about? And I was like, you're this big colossal comedian. And you were like, no, I'm not. I was like, yeah, you are. But a lot of people don't actually know who Dara O'Brien is.
Right.
So this is what we usually tend to do, where I guess we go kind of back to the start, give a little background on the guest. And
I'm very boring on that because it's really boring.
It's actually really not though, because I've done some research on you.
Right. And
it's like the stuff you do outside of comedy, you're like, how the fuck did you end up in comedy?
Yeah. I know that. I get that because I was all sciencey. Yeah. And I went to do science. But the only thing about comedy is you take a chance to do it and you get realized, oh, that feels good. And it's like, It's a bit of a drug addiction kind of a thing. You go, fuck, that was a nice hit. That felt good. And you chase the high, essentially. And it hits people. The desire to do that is randomly dotted through the population. So sometimes the person is an accountant, or sometimes the person is a performer. It doesn't matter. If they have the urge to be in front of a crowd, you know, they could be the class clown, or they could be the studious person. That's a better way to put it, actually. It could be either the really quiet person in the class, or it could be the person who is really outgoing in your class in school, like whatever. Equally, they could both really want to stand in front of an audience and make them laugh, you know, in a grown-up kind of context, whatever. And there's no guarantee that one will be any better than the other. Yeah, I know a lot of people who are really loud and brash and big personalities, and they were particularly great comics. It's grand.
You're from Bray. Do you want to just take us through? So, you're from Bray. What was life like growing up for you?
Really, really normal. Went to a Grail school, not in Bray. Commuted out of Bray most of the time because I was in school in Monkstown in an Irish language school there, and then went to a school called Closhone, which is Dublin. So my greater connection with Bray, really, because, you know, you go to school somewhere else, your friends are elsewhere, like whatever. So my greater connection with Bray was probably when I started playing with football teams in Bray. But I sort of always felt like an outsider in Bray. Bray's an interesting kind of weird town as well in many ways, particularly at the time, like whatever. It's kind of a weird mixture of very working class but also very middle class. There's a kind of, it's like a weird, there's a weird shell of working class estates on the outside of town, and then in the middle is a little rugby enclave because there's a prez there, you know, and there were pubs some people went in and pubs they didn't go to. And I was in Little Bray, which is kind of like, I mean, I'm quite middle class, but I was in Little Bray, which is very much the working class part of it all, the one of the working class areas. So it's a kind of, there's a weird tension in Bray. Bray could also be a bit rough. But it was a little bit rough, like whatever. So it was a so it's an interesting place to grow up. It also had that kind of sense, that vibe at the time of, like, you know, like a failed is the wrong word, but like whatever, like a former beach town, former beach resort. That then people went to Spain, so people didn't go to Bray. So it was like a prom of hotels and, you know, slightly faded amusements. It's a little bit more comfortable with itself than it was in the 80s, where it kind of like, it was like, oh my God, this is, it just felt a bit run down at times. And also there's a whole thing of being in a seaside town, you know, in winter is the most depressing thing.
Yeah.
You know, and a great, and like in the Irish Sea, battering against the thing and washing all the sand away, and it's just fucking stones. And it's just, it's windy and grey and stuff. And I ached to be out of there, to be honest. In the nature of a teenage boy who wants to be just anywhere other than the town he grows up in.
So the tourism board of Bray are not going to get you through any ads?
No, they haven't yet. And I think they do it all a lot better, the air show and the whole thing. And they kind of much more relaxed in their own skin as being just a suburb of Dublin now. But this, when you grew up in the 80s, it was all a bit, you know, it was different. It wasn't well off as well. But it's a lot, you know, kind of more, yeah. They've resurrected the main street and stuff like that now. So I still have family there. So I've been out there. And really, my kids love it. My kids absolutely adore it because my kids go out to it and it's like a seaside resort with Gino's Gelato and like a couple of really good pizza restaurants. And there's like, they really like going there, and there's an aquarium there for ages. And so they really like going to Bray. And I'd be like, okay, here we are. This is the place that I rushed out of to go to Dublin. But here we are back in the burbs. Just, they see it, it's on a completely different way. I'll be back in Bray tomorrow. So I can't be too down on it.
Did you ever say you studied science there?
Yeah, I went to university and did science. Yeah.
Was comedy always in the back of your mind when you were studying?
It wasn't. It was only when I went to university and I did a university debate. I watched people do these debates and they're very good at public speaking. I thought I'd like to try that. And I told a joke at one of them and I was like, oh. So, but the notion of doing actual comedy, there was no industry here. There was no example of it. There was nobody doing it. It was like, you might as well say, do you want to walk on the moon? It was like nobody was... had that job. There's a kind of thing, if you can see it, you can be it kind of thing but nobody, there was no example in 1990. There's like Barry Murphy and a few of those other Ardwell Handel, they were doing little gigs that you may have heard about going in town, like whatever, but like it wasn't an active thing, like whatever. I remember having a conversation once with somebody because it was like jobs you do in societies in university where you'd stand up and tell jokes in front of other students and you get a laugh, like whatever. And I remember talking with lads who we do this every week at these debate societies, and he said, and we were like laughing, well, what would you do after this? And so he said, comedy, ha ha, sure, who would do that? Like, nobody's gonna do that, like because it's such an unthinkable thing. And so when I started in 1995, it was the first summer that Tommy started, Jason Byrne started, I started. Got a few others who came in. David O'Doherty was just a year later than that. It was a huge sweep of comedy clubs. The Cat Laugh started in 96, and just things. Oh no, sorry, 95. And suddenly there was an interview. Father Ted happened, and suddenly it was like, oh, this is a thing. And so we're at this mad wave of, it's the first time there's ever been a club here in Cork or here in Galway, whatever. And we were like doing the first of these gigs, like whatever. And the whole thing was new. And it was a really cool thing to do because you're in a new industry here, what you're doing here, and you're all, you and the other people in your stable are all like, look at us doing this thing that nobody did 3 years ago. And so we had that in gigs in town, like in bars and pubs, that we were doing this and we're scooting around Dublin, making 60 quid here and 40 quid there, like whatever.
That's what I was going to say, but it's getting paid.
Getting paid and like just enough to live on. It was grand. You didn't care. You're young and it's grand. You're 22, 23. So you had enough money to cover the rent, which was a lot cheaper then, you know, so you could survive on it. And so it was just cool. It was this fun thing to do. And you're kind of going, okay, I'm probably putting off tougher decisions here about other things I should do. But then I started doing kids' TV as well. And I was writing news. You could do all sorts of different, and everyone was, hustling, I suppose, one for a better term, trying to get gigs in all sorts of different ways and find whatever the way to make a few quid here and there, like whatever. So it's just amazing. It was really, I like whatever. I'm not sure if that exists in the same way now, if I don't, cash exists in the same way. And I don't think that people's rent is much higher and it's all a little bit more difficult. You got to think about it more. You've got to be lucky and have parents who'll bail you out, like whatever. But it was really just, you just decide, fuck it, I'll go and live in Dublin and do comedy gigs. And there'll be enough to keep me taking over.
Yeah. So, yeah. Did you think, because there was no industry here, did you hit a ceiling here quicker? Is that why you went to the UK? Or
The UK was a little bit later. I probably hit a ceiling in terms of, you know, because, there was so far you go. And RT were doing stuff eventually, but I felt that I wasn't really breaking through in any, like breaking through the theatres or breaking through the kind of things, and I wasn't. And I had to, you still have to go and do Edinburgh and try to, like, it was just, you're aware that this was for relatively small here, and right next door was this massive country that had a load of gigs and loads of places that you could make actual money and maybe go on the telly and maybe do things that you could do lots of tours. Like, that was all there. The prize in the UK and living in London was so big, you know, compared to, you know, maybe going on RT every so often and then hanging around Reynard's or Lily's or whatever and doing that, like whatever. So it was always there. You go to Edinburgh and you do the Edinburgh Festival and you get this snapshot of this wider world. Because I remember the year before I went up, people were coming back going, oh my God, they'd gone up to Edinburgh. They started doing a year before I did. And they're like, oh, it's amazing. There's this thing called League of Gentlemen. I've just done a show and they became these huge stars. Johnny Vegas was there. All these were just doing brand new shows. And they were like, before they broke in a huge way. First time I went over, Peter Kay was doing a show. It was all people just doing, everyone came through there. And so you just got a sense of this is a bigger world that we're just a little island of. And, you know, we could go over there and actually play in a proper league. Football's not a bad parallel to over there and play on a bigger league. Now it doesn't feel the same way in that regard because of Tommy being as big as he is, whatever, the people and all of us doing all these big tours, the people are used to going out to Vicar Street or the MPHC shows. And so you can here build up enough of a following. I hope that you can get to that kind of level. But that sort of level. But, you know, you can't fight the fact that there's a massive gravitational pull of the UK over there, and you can go over there and sleep in somebody's spare room and travel around the country doing gigs like 7 nights a week, which you couldn't do here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's gigs all over the place, all over the country. It's a big country, the UK. You kind of forget it, but just because it's there and you feel like, well, we're here and we're there and like we're the same, we're not the same.
Nowhere near it.
No, 50 million people, whatever. It's huge. And if your job literally involves going to places where people live to tell them jokes, like whatever, you really quickly see the scale of it and how many places there are over there. Because I'll do 3 months of Ireland because I do loads of Vicar Streets. I'm now, in 2 weeks, I'm going to start the UK tour and it's a year. 100 gigs in like, and I say in about 80 different places, and like it's town after town after town. You could do 2 weeks of just a circle around London.
Yeah,
you could do 2 weeks within London, and you could do another 2 weeks of just going to places outside the M25. All these places, St Albans, and you know, Dorking and Woking, and all these places that, and they all have 1,000-seater theatres in them. It's just lots of people there.
That is mental when you think about it, because I wouldn't have thought about it like that. Obviously, the scale of England is so much bigger. The amount of places, obviously.
Yeah.
Even London in itself, when you're saying there's 1,000-seater venues and so
just
many
dotted around places. The city, there's loads of them. And then there's the West End, like, for God's sake. And so you spend a lot of time just traveling. I met Tony McCoy, you know Tony, the jockey? And he's an Arsenal fan, so we had a big chat about how well it's going and Arteta and what a legend is. But it really quickly went to, what's your favourite service station? Because he's done the same thing I've done. He's driven the length of the country and we know every bump of the road from Manchester to Liverpool to over to Birmingham, over to whatever. He knows, I like East Mimms on the M4. I said, oh, yeah, that's good. Actually, Sandbach on the M6 is quite nice, actually. And we're comparing like notes on this. And just for the crack of like, this is our life. People see the thing that you do, but they don't see the actual reality. The thing we have in common is like, oh, look, I better get off to this thing, you know, because it's going to be a 4-hour drive and then I'm going to do whatever, ride a horse or tell some jokes and I'm going to get in the car and drive back again, like whatever. That's the actual thing that you do. You spend a ton of time doing that. But it's a big, really populous place with lots of people.
Do you feel like we have a lack of venues over here?
I was literally about to say the same thing. Look at the mid-sized venues here.
Yeah, I think there's a problem like with that, in as much as that, I mean, we have it down to fine art. We play Dublin. INEC in Killarney, the Concert Hall in Limerick, the Opera Marquee. House in Wexford. Cork. Marquee, if you're lucky, you get to do the Marquee, the but that's Cork, and you do the Opera House in Cork. And then in Connacht, you play the Royal in Castlebar. Galway doesn't have a proper size venue, for example. There's nothing in the Midlands. There's gaps, really. I mean, that is just 5 points in a map. Mm. I mean, Derry, Belfast as well. But like, for the most part, no, there's a few 300 seaters,
yeah,
and that thing. But like, but the tendency, you know, if you want to be selling 1,000 every night, and you know you could do 1,000 in Woking, I'm not going to fly to, you know, Ennis to do a 300, like whatever. Just
yeah, of course,
I
yeah.
spend that time away from family, like the yeah. So it's a, but it's a, there's a lack of them. Oh, done Drogheda, the Tommy Ruddy Theatre in Drogheda, Tommy Leddy Theatre in Drogheda. I'm doing it the first time next week. There's not a lot of.
How has someone not jumped on that? And build a it's good weird, venue.
Actually, but there's, you know, that happens. It can be a bit of a gamble of a thing. It depends on rent and stuff like that. The,
Insurance and like, as well.
Yeah, they're difficult to start up like whatever. So they're all been there and they're all kind of really established and they've been there forever. Doing a brand new one is a tough thing to do. So my hat's off to anyone who does it. Like, yeah. But the other thing that did happen in the UK is 150 years ago, they built fucking thousands of theatres. So the Victorians built tons of theatres. Edwardians built tons of those ones, that model you have in your head of what a theatre looks like, the Olympia, for example,
yeah.
where there's that and there's people, some people below you, some people at eye line, and some people higher than you. That, like, with the stalls, circle, upper circle, that kind of traditional, that was invented by British theatre architects about 150 years ago, and they put them all over the country because the Victorians built race courses and they built theatres and they built leisure, basically. And then they built some here. But obviously not as many because he was poor and all that. So in the UK, you're essentially playing the heritage of all of these theatres that could build 150 years ago, which is why you don't, in America, you don't do that as much because not every town in America has loads of theatres in the same way. Yeah. But the UK is crawling with theatres. And so when you come up in the UK, you can do your 200-seater tour when you're just kind of starting off and you get a little bit bigger, you pay your 400-seater tour because there are enough places around the UK to do 40 theatres that have got 200 seats and then a different 40 theatres that have 400 seats and then a different 40 seats that have 800 seats in all these towns. And then maybe you get to 1,600 or maybe you start doing arenas. You can work your way up the thing. So it's just, it's built for it. It's a really good place. We have Americans who come over and they go, oh, hang on, so what do you, and then you tell them, oh no, I work 300 nights a year or whatever, I do to 150 gigs just in the UK. And they're like, you're kidding me. Because their system is like, you just do clubs and you do clubs and you get paid a bit of money. Like, and you go, oh no, I had 1,000 people in a town in Telford. You've never heard of it, whatever, but I had 1,000 people in there last night. Like, and that blows their mind. Like, whatever, you go, well, no, I did Chicago and I had 300 in. Oh no, man, you're really in the wrong game entirely, like whatever. Because after Telford, I drove down to, you know, Leicester, and there I did two nights in a 1,300 seater there, like whatever. They just, what? That is like, yeah, and and after me, then there was like another, and then Sarah Pascoe was in the next night, and after then there was Jason Manford for three nights, whatever. They just go to loads of shows. So it's we're the luckiest, it's just right there. Yeah. And it has this massive industry. Yeah, and a massive opportunity to do it like that. So
that's obviously the best decision you've ever made in your career, was going across the water.
I had to. And like, I mean, there was an element to which there was that I was, you know, Tommy was the king and everyone fought totally loving him. And it was kind of, you're butting up against the ceiling of how well he was doing. And I had to kind of go away and sort of prove it somewhere else to come back in again.
Yeah.
That was kind of thing. And there was a whole thing about, and it's not Tommy's fault, he broke through in a way because other people had a tendency to be, Oh, are you? And then you go abroad and do it well. They go, oh, okay, I suppose you are now. There was a kind of a thing that you had to do, which happened for lots of different showbiz things or whatever. You'd have a hit in America, you have things, and suddenly people were like, oh, I like them. Yeah, no, I'm glad. Yeah, oh, no, I always liked you too. And it wasn't because they became bigger than you on college radio in America. You did well, and it was kind of proof. You could go, look, I've been on the BBC, and they go, okay, all right, then we will go and see your show.
Yeah.
So it was a thing to do.
Yeah.
Current show on tour you're doing now.
Yeah,
recreation.
Yep. I don't know. Recreation. It's a recreation sense regarding creation, and it's about how I was born.
Yeah,
and about adoption and tracking down my birth father, because I did a show about tracking down my birth mother previously, and this is the natural sequel to that.
Yeah.
And it's a really good story. So I was just given a really good story.
Yeah.
So I just tell the story. It's literally half an hour of the show.
Can you tell us a bit about what it's like finding out that you're adopted and how does that come about? Like, what do you do then? Because
it's easier in some ways now because there's all sorts of mechanisms now. Even 5 years ago when I I knew it was, and I kind of put on the long finger. Yeah. It's the thing that sits in your head, you know, but it's not supposed to be a secret, and they sort of said it. But people, they didn't shout about it, didn't go on about it. And to the extent that I, in my 30s, sat my dad down once and goes, can you confirm for me, basically, am I adopted? And he went, yes, you are. That shouldn't mean, it's not a secret. Like, but we just, you know, you don't go on, you don't keep. And I kind of get, the line I had at the time was like, you're told to tell a child, but at some point you're going to stop saying it.
Yeah.
Because it feels weird to be going to your child constantly going, hey, happy birthday, you're adopted. like you're just kind of really rubbing their face. Well done, your leaves that you're adopted. So you kind of stop doing it, like whatever. And I sort of like half forgot it, and then he converted. And then I put I must look it up someday. I must look it up someday. It was one of those things. And I meet loads of lads who have done this, who found out, who are my age and older. Because the peak age for adoption ended about 2 years after I was born, because they brought in mother's allowance, single mother's allowance, which didn't exist in Ireland until about 1974. And the minute they brought that in, people didn't give their kids for adoption. Because mothers went like, oh, I can look after the kid then. If you're giving me a few quid a week, like, I don't have to give the child up for adoption. Like,
that's crazy. Actually.
It's mad. And it's the most insane graph I've ever seen, because the numbers are like 1,500 a year, and then they bring this money in, and then it drops to 150 a year. It just goes off a cliff. The number of adoptions just drops to normal levels, let's say. It's because rather than having to give your kid up, like whatever, you could now afford the state's help to raise your own child. It's amazing graph. Vump, just like a cliff, like Tesla's share price. It just goes down. Yeah. It just drops out there. So I'm kind of among the last couple of years of it, like where there was lots of it. But I keep meeting men of my age or a little bit older than me who did the same thing I did, just going, I must look up that someday. Because it's like a very broad strokes. Women immediately check it. And men go, oh yeah, I must look that up someday. Yeah, I must go around to that. Like, whatever. Yeah. I don't know the point now. It's gone, but I must. You know, and they say it like, I'm adopted. I've never looked it up, like whatever. Anyway, they don't do a thing about it. And so I did a search, which is difficult to do, and then I found my mother and all stuff. But actually, when I told the story on stage, I'd have lads come up to me at the door of the thing and go, yeah, I'm going to do that now. I remember a guy in Manchester. At Manchester's theatre, which is kind of. Sort of in the middle of nowhere. It's near the new. It's in Salford, near not far from the United Stadium. But it's faced onto a kind of a body of water. It's kind of empty and lonely looking. Because I just remember this guy who was at the stage or waiting. He just came up and said, "Look, I've never looked that up, and I'm going to look it up now." And he just gave me a hug, and then he walked away. And he could see him walking off into the distance. And some of those people, you know, I've chatted longer than that to them, but like whatever. But the same thing. It's just a guy who went, do you know, I should look that up. Mm. I put it off till now, like whatever, and I'll find out something now. But I did the whole search. And it was a mad story, and it was weird because the Irish government did at the time didn't make it easier. They've since opened the files, and you can get your own files now.
A murky pass with kids and adoption in this country, though. There's a murky pass.
Oh, it's dreadful. Yeah, absolutely dreadful. And there's a reckoning that has to occur, like whatever. And people had a lot worse than I did. My birth mother was never, it was never in a laundry or in that kind of stuff, like whatever. It wasn't that. It was kind of cruel and uncaring and there's all these weird twists. Like there was a woman who once got a prison sentence or a suspended sentence for selling babies to America. And her name is on my birth cert. Because after this happened, she went back to running a nursing home and she was in attendance at my birth. And I read that out every night to people. Like I'd tell the story of her and then 10 minutes later I'd go, and here's another name. And I'd point to the thing on the form and I'd go, and I'd say her name, like whatever. And the audience would go, and they go, yeah, she went back into running it and she was at my birth. And there's a whole beat of like people going, fly by. So it was a mad story. But it's kind of sort of a dark story and a dark story to tell. And there were times, I'll admit, that we were on tour and we go to somewhere where I hadn't been before. And I had a separate, a plan B show of just greatest hits that I might just go, no, I'm just going to do this tonight. This doesn't feel like a place to bring the audience on a bit of a journey here. So I'm just going to do the fun show tonight. Some audience don't know how close they came to having an emotionally taxing evening as opposed to here's some gags about, tits, whatever. It was called the Vienna model. It was this thing that we did a gig in Vienna and I made a decision on the night going, oh no, look at them. No, look, let's just go. I've never been here before. Let's just go. Hey, it's great to hear. I've never been to Vienna. Boom, boom, boom. Let's do jokes and leave it. Not do. Okay, here's a difficult story about Ireland's attitude towards unmarried mothers in the 1970s.
But you met your birth mother.
Yeah.
And is it true that she was watching you and she was a fan of you?
Nope. Don't know what I know. There's no particular thing. The no.
Oh, I can see that's like too neat. The blimp,
it'd be too neat to take. She knew who I was.
I read a thing before this and I was like,
there's a version of the, whatever, but actually I don't, there wasn't a, and she certainly wouldn't have known who I was. I would have never gone, that's, you know, it would never have pieced.
No, I don't mean she's not looking saying that's my son on stage. She's like, oh, that's Sarah Bean, he's a comedian, I'm a fan of his. Then she finds out you're her son.
I don't think she was specifically a fan in the sense of how to attend shows or anything like that. The but there is a nice thing that the that my half siblings, when the first time I met them, were all very kind of you're right, and we're very, you know, I wouldn't say distant, but we didn't want to be, you know, overly familiar, like whatever, but we're chatting away and all that. And the second time I met them, somebody slipped about. Because when you moved to London, I remember thinking, and I go, oh, sorry, because you all acted like you'd know who clue who I was the first time. I said, oh, and of course we knew who you were. And so they knew who I was, but they weren't making making a thing of it. Which is probably the right way to do. The whole journey is really weird in Ireland. I've had my wife is British, and she's often finds the way we mythologize ourselves in this country to be a little bit, she rolls her eyes slightly at the, oh, where are you? Oh, we're no one is like this. Nowhere is that. She's like, she's from Yorkshire. She's like, yeah, right. It's great. There's lots of people like this. At the, but she did go that the, in Ireland with the adoption thing, the fact that you can just ring up somebody and go, so anyway, I think I'm your cousin slash your mother slash your father, whatever. I think, you know, and they go, Jesus. Anyway, so look how are things going to go away? Whatever. And that ability we have to just,
it's so serious, but we're so casual.
We have a surface level that we can just slip to really easily, and that will keep the conversation going. So if you're quiet, you can talk about the ring road in Athlone or something like that, and chat about how badly that's going or whatever, or the championship or whatever, you know, or things like whatever. Will you ever get a decent team out of this county again? Oh, sure, I don't know. You can do that, and it can just keep it ticking over very easily. In the way that she said, if you were doing this into somebody in England, it might be a little bit more formal, a little bit colder, you know. And so I get that whole, which I think is genuinely irritating when people aren't Irish, the whole, should we all know each other? We all know each other. That's great the way we all know each other. That bullshit that we do. Like, but she finds out, okay, fine, grad, yeah. Like every knows people, right? Relax. We all know people. But our sense to do that really works in this circumstance. It really meant that there was a kind of a level of, sure, look, we can just talk, can't we, about this? It's grand. And so, but it wasn't that they were, they knew who I was, but they played it quite cool about the whole thing. Hasn't happened always the case, you know, because I've done a lot of these searches. It's grand.
It's some journey. Go ahead, sorry, Terrence.
No, I know he has to go. So
yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Plug his dates. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, plug my dates.
Sorry, because we know.
When does this go out? Look, so we're doing this in do you know what? I'm back in Vicar. I'm back in Vicar in July. Right, so we're doing two more weekends in Vicar in July, because this is great and it's been lovely, and I don't leave it at this. We've generally tried always. COVID kind of fucked this a bit with the order of events, like whatever. But generally, the aim has always been to start in Vicar and end in Vicar. And that won't be the case, you know, because these things now go on for a year and a half. But so we'll do a load of dates here. We'll come back in July. And the hope is always to just touch back, to do some UK dates, but to come back. It's like this is where the show starts and it's in original form. It's perfect form is in Vicar. And so then I'll go off and I'll do slightly different versions. So I'll drop things and pick up things. So somewhere there'll be a board that I've got to write in a week and a half in which I take the stuff that's really Irish.
Yeah.
And I take that out.
Just leave that there.
Leave that. And then there's a couple of other routines which are very English that I don't do in here. And I bring them in again. But I will take that off the board, take the pin out of that and put them back in again. I'll bring that in again. Because there's a whole routine I'm particularly loving about. There's a dodgy casino / lap dancing bar on Crane Lane. And I have a routine about that, which I really love. And I'm not going to explain that to people in Buxton, in Derbyshire.
Or Telford, wherever,
exactly.
So what's the date you're back in Vicar Street then?
Jesus, I have no idea off the top of my head, but it's July.
It'll be in July.
It's July. There's two weekends in July.
And anywhere else in the country?
Yeah, the Marquee. At that point, I mean, because this is because we're finishing up Ireland, the main block of the Irish tour finishes as I'm saying this next week, which is the end of March. So they'll be, you know, there's nothing left there. And then it'll be July. July and the Marquee are the ones at this stage. Please, because I will say this: the show during the moment, there is a twist in the show which is as perfect a thing as I've ever had to deliver in 30 years of doing this. And there's a bit where I'm watching the audience and going, in a minute now. And it's just lovely because I know it's coming. I know it's happening and they're not seeing it. And then it happens and it's just, it's gorgeous. And in that room in particular has been just divine doing it, like whatever, because people are loose and like involved and emoting with it, like whatever. And it just, it's one of the nice, I was just gifted this story because just what happened. And it's just, so all I do is just tell it. And it's more like being the curator of this thing rather than the creator. You know what I mean? Like whatever. It's not like I've made this thing happen, yeah, like whatever.
I am just going to,
so all I can do, that's the thing, I think the constant line around, all you can do is fuck this up. Yeah. You're not going to make it any better. All you can do is make a fucking arse of this, like whatever. So please God, don't fuck this up. And I just deliver it. But like when we're in the middle of the run of it, this show, the last show, what people really liked, because it was all, this show has some of that, but without the darkness actually, because it's not a darker story, but it's a big story. And then there's just, it's just
chef's kiss.
So nice. Yeah. And it was like, even when it happened, I'm going, oh, that's so nice. Yeah. And, you know, I'd never think to say that. I'd never think this thing. I've just been gifted this thing. And so I just say it. And it's as lovely a thing. So yeah, please see it. Please see it in Vicar. It's just,
yeah. Where can you get the tickets? Ticketmaster?
I think so. Or Vicar, go directly to Vicar's site. They'll be linked. Darbreen.com. I'm sure there's details on it, like whatever's grand. People genuinely ask is if you walk around and it's in your pocket.
Yeah.
And they go, what do you want them for? you wet your finger. Okay, let me get through that. Like whatever. Yeah, I've got two right close to the front, or do you want somewhere in the back? Yeah, okay, fine. Yeah, okay. No, they're on a thing, and there's probably a seat map or something that you can pick stuff. But yeah. It's all computers now. Everything's computers now.
Yeah.
So yeah, thank you. That's what it is, and it'd be lovely.
Right.
Sorry for being late again.
I'd forgotten it ever happened.
I'm bringing it back up now.
I didn't know you had to bring it up. You made it tense again.
Wait, see when he stands up as well. He's bigger than you.
Have you got anything now? Or maybe there's something with six you had to get to? When you're doing the lie, put the time so it makes you seem early.
Why did I bring it up?
Doing the lie, just don't go, don't compound it. Thank you for making time in your day to come and see me in your place of work. So good of you too. And look, it's a bit of Dublin. Come across Dublin this hour of the day for a man who's not allowed to drive. I mean, everything is working against you.
It was a pleasure.
It was genuinely a delight, lad. It was really nice.
And Darragh O'Brien roasting Terence for 15 minutes wasn't on me bingo card for the year, but I'm so happy it happened.
But like, you know what I mean? Like I did before, you always bring the joke back in again at the end. That's the callback. It's like a tiny Vicar Street. Yeah. I called it back here at the end, like whatever. And they always are going, oh yeah, we'd almost forgot about Terence and being late.
When we started this podcast, I think we thought it would only be people from the inner city who would listen.
I know, and now we have listeners all out. Over the place, even as far as Talla.
Sorry to hear.
So this is a message to everyone in Talla. FBT Gym have opened up their new state-of-the-art location now, offering not only top-of-the-line equipment, but also resources, classes, and events that will help you build connection among members and an overall support of fitness community.
And if you're lucky enough not to live in Talla, why not join one of their other locations in Swords, Coolock, or Drogheda?
Do these locations have the classes and supportive community as well?
Of course. That's what FBT Gyms are all about. They also offer personal training, heated chamber classes, and a HYROX affiliated.
Unleash your potential at FBT Gym for only €44 a month with no contract, full class access, and locations in Swords, Coolock, Drogheda, and now Talla.
Sign up at fbtgyms.ie today. Yeah,
we get Mel here. Take us out, Ed.
Good luck.
Talking Bollocks with FBT Gyms. Unleash your fitness potential with no contract and full class access. fbtgyms.ie.
Go loud. Sounds better with us.
Subscribe to this podcast for free on the Go Loud app.
What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your weight in it now. Fill your body up. Walk it hard and slow. When you finish that.
The hip knocker.
Go down. Go down. Go down. Come up. Come up. Come up. Come up. Go down. Go down. Go down. Go down.
This is an ad for Roundup for Lawns. It kills weeds down to the root without harming your lawn. It works on crabgrass, dandelions, clover. It works on weeds with names you can't even pronounce. It's Roundup for Lawns. When used as directed, always read and follow pesticide label directions.